This talk is given by a student at Ordinary Mind Zendo. In these talks, senior students explore their personal journeys, share their understanding of the Dharma, and offer encouragement to others in their practice. The talks are unique in that they present a diverse set of voices walking a common path.
I trace the origin of my interest in Buddhism to the year 2002, when I was already 59 years old. So I was no kid looking for answers to life's big questions. I was just looking for friends. I was looking for a community. I had gone through a really painful divorce. I was low on money. My son was in college. My house on Long Island was rented out. So I took a sabbatical from my academic position. And I went to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, where my daughter was living. One day I went to the public library in Chapel Hill, and there on a bulletin board was a notice. Duke University was looking for participants for a clinical trial in the treatment of depression for the elderly. And you know how these notices that you see in public places have little strips of paper to the side with phone numbers to call? I tore off one of those little strips of paper, put it in my pocket, went back to my daughter's house, called the number. To make a long story short, I was accepted into the treatment and began a new adventure. Now, some of you will recognize this treatment as dialectical behavior therapy. I wasn't really interested in any of that stuff. All I wanted was some connections. I did receive medications. I received weekly therapy. And I attended a mindfulness meditation group. There were about eight of us in this group. All the rest, of course, were Southerners, and there was me. We had two teachers, two leaders at other end. And I took to mindfulness. I liked it. I had been brought up in a Presbyterian church where I sat through countless sermons and prayers and all that kind of stuff. My mother was the organist. We went every single Sunday. When I turned 13, I went to a Quaker boarding school, which is right down the road from my home now. And I learned to sit quietly in friends' meeting over and over and over. And I could do that. The treatment lasted 6 months. And I can't say that I was, that my mood had improved significantly. But looking back, I can see that I was launched. My therapist had mentioned once that he attended the Chapel Hill Zen Center. So I'm thinking, what's that about? So at the end of the program, I paid a visit to the Chapel Hill Zen Center. And I went back 5 times, 6 times. Never met a single person. It was just one of these places where everybody is tending to their own business, looking at the floor or looking at the wall, marching around in circles. I had no idea what they were doing. And by the time, a few weeks went past, I didn't care. And one day they were all marching around. The line went out into another room, and I said, where the heck are they going? And I just went straight out the door into my car, and I never went back. At the end of that year, at the end of the summer, I had to return to my job on Long Island. I had to teach my classes. I did. And then the next summer, I had to rent out my house again. And I rented out my house then every year during the summers for about 15 years. And I had to get lost. So most of the time in all those years, I went up to the Boston area. And the first thing I did, well, I had a research project. And I did, honest, I did work on that. But mostly what I did was I traveled around. I visited every single Buddhist organization within driving distance of Boston. I visited insight meditation centers. I was invited to attend a Sri Lankan Theravadan center, but I had to wear white. I didn't have an all-white costume, and I didn't want to buy one, so I backed out of that. I went to Shambhala, downtown Boston. But the people attracted to that particular group were young, the teachers were young, and it wasn't a good fit for me. I did the Tibetan Gampas. Oh, the Tibetans were fun. You know, they're very colorful. They have their just remarkable programs, initiations, all kinds of celebrations, the food. One especially memorable teaching was evoking green Tara out of your head, up into the air, and then back down into your head, into your body. And I said, oh, I love this. Green Tara is my girl. Until I kind of had a falling out with the Lama. And he was eager to come visit. And when he took one look at my house, and he thought that would make a great retreat center. And, you know, there was something in it for him that I had no interest in. Finally, I gravitated back to Zen Buddhists. And there were a lot of Zen Buddhist organizations around Boston because James Ford was teaching, he was preaching and teaching. He was a Unitarian Universalist minister in the Boston area, and he was also a Zen master. And he was encouraging people at that time to develop small sanghas in church basements. One of those that I went to had been started and was run by Bob Waldinger. And some of us on the Google group had some conversations about Bob Waldinger. He is a wonderful teacher, a very kind and warm man. And his sangha was not quite as old as I was, but, getting up there. And as were the other members of his sangha. So I felt comfortable in that place. I liked the people. They greeted me when I came in. It was friendly. And I liked Bob very much. He was a very good teacher. At the end of one summer, I asked him if we could continue to email. And he said, sure. He said, let's discuss by email Uchiyama's Opening the Hand of Thought. And I thought, oh, this is great, just what I wanted. And so I would email Bob once a week with a question or a comment, and he would respond. And we did this all year until until we finished the book. When I went back the following summer, I asked Bob, would you be my teacher? Because I was catching on that that was one of the, just like a tradition in all the Buddhist sanghas. And so I asked Bob if he would be my teacher. And he said he would like to very much, but he was not authorized. He was not yet in a position to take students. So I'm thinking, well, okay, then I'll find out who his teacher is and I'll go there. That's exactly what I did. His teacher was in Worcester, Massachusetts. And so I went to her. And she was the abbot of a big temple, as they called it, although it was actually a really huge, old, kind of dilapidated house in Worcester. And their temple was operated as a quasi-monastic outfit with a hierarchy of priests, and then sort of lower on the scale, the teachers, and then the ordinary Sangha people. So this was something new to me, this kind of structure. But I got up my courage and I asked the teacher if I could study with her. And she was quite stern, but she said yes. But there were four conditions. First was I had to ask her three times. I said, well, I could do that. I asked her three times. Then I had to write out a spiritual autobiography. Now, I can write, so, you know, I had no idea what to put into it, but, you know, I did that. Then we had a written covenant that we had to sign. And I signed my side of it, and I waited for her to sign, but she didn't, and I asked, and she says, no, she says, my position speaks for itself. I stopped, you know, that made me stop and think. But I carried on. The next step was a shokan ceremony with, where I went, we lit a candle together. We just lit a stick of incense. I think we said some vows back and forth. It took 5 minutes. And then I was on my way back to Long Island. So I had become a student formally. More informally, I had a very important teaching experience, learning experience in the kitchen. During one sesshin, I was assigned to the kitchen crew to prepare vegetables for the lunch and dinner. And the cook, the tenzo, was a very quiet, very kind man, a young man. And we were all to stand in front of him in a semicircle, and he would bow to us, and we would bow to him, and he said, would you please, he turned to me, would you please prepare the carrots? Next person, would you please prepare the potatoes, and so on. Then he showed us to our stations in the kitchen, handed us these huge, dangerous knives, showed us where the vegetables were. He showed me how to peel and cut carrots silently, carefully, respectfully. There was no sound in that kitchen while we were cutting carrots, potatoes, turnips, you know, all those things that we would generally just kind of chop up at home. It was a wonderful teaching, something that has stayed with me this whole time, and I'm so very grateful for it. The rest of my time at this particular temple was not as much fun, shall we say, not as rewarding. I started to study koans there. And the koan system at this place consisted of a curriculum of initially 30, I think, preliminary koans that we were to take in order. And we would take the koan we were assigned to one teacher, then to the next, then to the next, and usually by the time we got to the fourth teacher, you know, and this is all in Dokusan during sessions. By the time we got to that fourth teacher, you know, they would approve it and pass us on to the next koan. Well, I knew nothing about koans, but my reading suggested they could be kind of fun. And they were interesting, and they were, they looked like a really, they could be a very effective teaching method. But that didn't happen here. Didn't happen for me. Part of the response for in their koan study was to portray the image that was represented. So, for example, to perform being a bell, to perform being a rhinoceros or a fox or whatever, you get the idea, literally to perform what these things were. Now, you have to understand that, for one thing, all the other teachers except for the abbot were men, and I was 73 years old by the time I got there. So portraying a rhinoceros for me was, I got to tell you, super embarrassing. And I made it through, but I said, you know, well, actually, one day I did not make it through. I got unbelievably angry at the teacher. The only other time I had ever been so angry was when my husband told me he was leaving. So you can imagine it was on the same scale as that. And then, of course, I was humiliated that here I was acting out, you know, this old lady even acting out like this. So I went to the abbot. Oh, I confessed. I felt terrible. And she was not happy. She was not happy with me. And I could see the end was in sight. Now, by this time, I had bought a little condo in Cambridge. Cambridge has most wonderful used bookstores. I had picked up Barry's two books, $5 for one, $6 for the other. What a bargain. I took them home. I read them. They made sense. They put my experience into some kind of perspective. I went back to my teacher at the temple and I said, "May I have your permission to visit Ordinary Mind Zendo?" And she thought about this for a while. And then she said, "Yes, you may visit, but do not study koans with Barry Magid." So that was all I needed to hear. Next day, I was on the bus. Well, the next Saturday, I was on the bus on my way into Manhattan. I hadn't been to New York probably for 25 years. I was totally unfamiliar with it. I did find the Zendo, 74th Street. I arrived just as Barry was arriving. I looked at him. I think that's Barry Magid, but because I only knew him from the pictures in his books, which were, shall we say, printed a few years earlier. We both entered the Zendo at the same time. And there was Claire at the door. She welcomed me. She showed me where to sit. And I was thinking, I can do this. This will work. Barry gave his Dharma talk. Then he had Dokusan. I met him in Dokusan, poured out my heart, you know, like we do. And he sat there calmly listening, soaking it all in. And you know, after taking too long, I know I held up the Dokusan line, but I was so relieved. After the program, after discussion like we have here, Barry hands me a book. He hands me a book. I'm thinking, what's this? I look at the title, Moment to Moment by David Budbill. It's a book of poetry. I'm thinking, oh no, I haven't read a poem in 50 years. What am I going to do with this? And I opened it up to the bookmark, Bugs in a Bowl. Then I'm thinking, what have I gotten myself into? This is wild. But I went home and ordered the book, of course, right away. Kept going back to the Zendo every Saturday. I was through with that outfit in Massachusetts. I just went regularly now on Saturdays. And one day in Dokusan, I asked Barry, what do I need to do to be your student? And I'm expecting this long rigmarole. And he just looks at me quietly and he says, show up and be honest. Oh, I was so relieved. I said, I can do that. I have been going back every week, showing up and trying to be honest. A few weeks after that, I showed up at the Zendo, and Barry wasn't there. He had to be away that weekend, you know, and he didn't tell me. And it's just, oh, poor me. I had made this trip in, and all for nothing. And so I'm sitting there seething. Should I just go home, or shall I stick it out? Well, of course, I stuck it out. And Chris, by then, was the resident. Chris rang the bell, and so I'm getting my stuff together, and I'm getting ready to go home. And some of the people turn to me, and they say, come with us out for lunch at Lenny's. And I said, well, my bus leaves at 2 o'clock. I don't think I have time. Oh, come on, they said. You could come. I said, well, maybe I'll take a later bus. So I went to Lenny's. I had lunch. I made friends. We had lunch at Lenny's for many, many weeks until the pandemic. It was a wonderful thing. Those are the friends that I made there. Since then, of course, we're making friends here on Zoom that I never imagined. And now I have friends where I live at Crosslands, friends to sit with there as well. That's what I was looking for, friends and a community and a teacher. And I feel so very fortunate that I have found them. Before I close, I do want to read a poem to you. It's called Bugs in a Bowl. And it is by David Budbill. Han Shan, that great and crazy, wonder-filled Chinese poet of 1,000 years ago, he said, we are just like bugs in a bowl, all day going around, never leaving their bowl. I say, that's right. Every day climbing up the steep sides, sliding back over and over again, around and around, up and back down. Sit in the bottom of the bowl, head in your hand, cry, moan, feel sorry for yourself. Or look around, see your fellow bugs. Walk around. Say, hey, how you doing? Say, nice bowl.